Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome to the Irish Country Living Podcast.
Hello, you're very welcome back to the Irish Country Living Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Donoghue. I'm delighted to be joined on the podcast this week by dance maker Emma Martin. Emma, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Anne. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for coming on. I suppose, Emma, before we dive into all things dance, just to let you know from the start, I can't dance, so don't ask me to or anything. Thank God this is a podcast and not a video. Would you tell us a small bit just about yourself and your work?
Well, I've been involved in dance from a very young age, the age of three.
And, age of three, wow.
Yeah, as a messer, really, from 3 to 12. And then, you know, I started taking it seriously. And initially, I was a ballet dancer. I went off to Germany to train as a ballet dancer. Worked as a ballet dancer for a number of years. And then I sort of took a break because I felt like I wanted to have more input into, you know, and sort of exploring more dance. Then I went and studied some theatre and Russian, and then sort of started making my own shows. Like, really naively, like having tons of people on stage and all the rest. And then I, you know, as you go on, you realize that the costs of everything. And so I've been making shows for a couple of years. Yeah, I mean, dance feels as important and as vital to me as it always did. And I feel like it's like my religion.
I can imagine it is. You've been involved since the age of three. And am I correct in saying that you call yourself a dance maker?
Yeah. I suppose choreographer.
Your work is a little bit more than just choreography. You're really fusing theatre and a lot of different things in there. It's not just, I suppose, dance and steps and things.
That's it. Yeah. No, completely. And there's so many different names for people, you know, dance theatre, dance, whatever. And I suppose choreographer, because I'm so collaborative, you know, when I bring dancers into a room, I don't say, you do this and this and this, like, we really work together, you know, and I bring them in because of how they dance. And so the dances that are seen on stage then are a mixture of my movement and their movement. And I think dance maker is a better term. Yeah.
And is most of your work focused on contemporary dance?
Yes, it is. But what is contemporary dance?
That was my next question. You took the words right out of my mouth.
I'm like, what is contemporary dance? Because I'm not trained in contemporary dance. I guess contemporary dance is, I would see it as a personal dance expression. However, there are lots of people who are trained in techniques of contemporary dance, which I am not. So it's very much, you know, as I said, kind of working with how other people move. But then more recently, not even like since 2012, I've kind of had an interest in lots of other forms. So like, I had majorettes in one of my shows. I've been working with freestyle dancers, like kids from Carlo, for a number of years, and bringing that sort of flavor, you know, that sort of, it feels really current, and it's, you know, it's sort of something so energetic and outrageous about this freestyle dancing that I'm just like, it's so virtuosic. I find it really impressive. So I'm really, really open to lots of different types of dancing and whatever at the time of making a show that I feel will really, you know, bring the energy I'm looking for, I'll bring that into the room.
And I suppose that's what contemporary is by its very nature anyway. It's new and changeable and things like that. So, you know.
Totally. Yeah.
And talk to us about you. So you were only fitting this in amongst a load of different rehearsals, this interview, because you have a very, very exciting week coming up next week. Your new show, Night Dances, is part of the Dublin Theatre Festival next week.
Yes.
Will you tell us a small bit about the show and I suppose what it's made up of?
Yeah, so Night Dances, it's been, you know, sort of bubbling in my brain for about 3, even 4 years maybe. And I guess I wanted to make something that didn't have any responsibility to be about something. I wanted to make a show that felt more like it was for, like it was an offering for something. And that, you know, to trust in the fact that sometimes dancing isn't. Dance having to be used as a storytelling device, or, you know, so that was one thought. And then the other thought was I always use like lots of different music in the studio to sort of juice the dancer's energy and if I'm looking for a certain dynamic. So I went and spoke to Daniel Fox, who's the bassist in Girl Band, because I really love their music, and particularly how he plays his bass, which is, it's a very, very sort of heavy sound. And I asked him if he'd be interested in coming forward and making a show where we really just bring those two things together and make the music and the dance at the same time. And so that it would feel very much like a celebration, like a release of energy and like a sort of collective shake off, you know, of all this sort of pent up feelings we have at the moment.
So it's like a post-pandemic kind of a blowout.
It kind of is. Yeah, that's kind of where I suppose that it felt like that 4 years ago as well. But now it's just like, wow, OK, now is the time for the show. So, yeah.
And it's kind of, from what I was reading, is it made up of four different parts? Kind of you're referring to them as poems, but I assume they're more, are they pieces of music?
Yeah, they're actually four distinct dances and four pieces of music, but the music kind of runs, you know, it's like an hour long kind of piece of music. And I've called them poems slightly irreverently because, I mean, you know, they're not poems, but for me, because, you know, the nature of how each dance, you know, how I think about it and where the impetus came from for each dance and feel like, you know, they're their own little poem. And so there's a male solo, which deals with, I guess it's like, you know, if we imagine like energy racing around the body and it has to be released in some way, that this dancer is dealing with energy that's not released in a very constructive way. So it turns into this sort of rage energy, which I guess when I gave up dancing for a number of years, you know, after years of using daily energy through dance, then you suddenly feel like it goes into other places and, you know, and your thoughts kind of change and stuff. So that's where that came from. And then with the young freestyle dancers, that's the next part. They are, I suppose, they're symbols of the future. They're girls, you know, they're young 10 to 13 year old girls. I've called that bit God is a Girl. They feel like little warriors, you know, they are, I guess for them, the provocation that I gave them was like the, you know, the statue of Mary that we see all around the country, and she's so beautiful, but she's so demure and subservient in a way. And I was like, what we want to do is crack that statue from the inside out, and how, you know, to release that image a little bit. And then the next solo is another male solo that's, it feels like The Last Raver. It's called The Raver, and it's one lone dancer, and he's like really channeling music. And that came from an early memory of mine when my brother went out one night, and he wasn't allowed to go out. And he was at my cousin's, playing a gig in the SFX in Dublin, and my mom went in and collected them. And my mom was also this cousin's godmother, very familiar. And she walked into this, full on rave, and grabbed my brother out. And I always remember looking through those doors and just seeing the sea of people dancing and just being totally, you know, like they were just taken by the music. And I was absolutely terrified when I thought, so it was probably only 12, but also like, wow, like it just blew me away, and this memory is just in my mind. So
was that totally different to what you would have been doing at the time, I suppose, in terms of ballet, very structured? Was it also a glimpse into a new future, kind of?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I loved the structure and the discipline of ballet, and the sort of, you know, the really kind of hard nature of it. But I think somehow I carried that feeling along with me, and I was like that, you know, untrained people going out every week and dancing, you know, all their troubles away. And this, I have so much regard for that, you know. And eventually you did that myself when I was of an age to be allowed to go out. And then the last piece is a trio of women, and they are, I suppose, like the symbolize, you know, the triple goddess, the three Marys, the three witches. And they're sort of, you know, three is such a kind of powerful number. And I suppose that's a dance that our mothers and grandmothers maybe didn't get to do. It's very free, it's very full on, it's quite, you know, virtuosic fitness wise. That's really the kind of full release at the end of the show. Quite clubby, actually.
Yeah, they'll be just in time for the nightclubs to open up about a week after this show, so get people nice and excited.
I know, yeah, yeah.
And Emma, would you say, do you have to be super into dance to go to a show like this?
Oh my God, I do not want people who are into dance to come to this show. No, I do as well, but it's not for people who are just into dance, you know. It's really, I think the marriage of the dance and the music, it, you know, the dancer just really channeling the music. It's very, the movement is not, well, apart from the little kids, they're pretty virtuosic with legs and all the rest, but it feels very much like how people dance, you know, and it feels quite natural in that way. Yeah, no, it's really about breaking those barriers, you know, to trying to understand. It's just pure instinct, pure music, pure music, and expressions of that. So I would love someone who's never been to a show to come and see this, and take it as an invitation to that dancing, even on your own in your kitchen, is enough.
Would you have any advice for someone coming to a show like this in terms of, I suppose, enjoying it, or maybe understanding it, or getting their own out of it? Should you watch a dance show and see what it kind of feels to you, or what would you say to a friend now who is coming to it, who hadn't been to a dance show before?
I would say, just come and enjoy it. You don't need to read anything about it. You don't need to. You don't need to tell me what you understood from it. Like, it's, I guess with the four parts, they're not tied together exactly for that reason. Like, it's to really cut any possible narrative reading. Even in shows where I have had more of a narrative, or I've had like quite a strong, you know, sort of story, even if it was chopped up, I would never want an audience or somebody to come to you, am I right in thinking it was this, this, and this? You know, I always feel like it's right if you think that's right. You know, I know what I wanted, but you're creating a new story out of this for yourself. So it's for people to see themselves, I guess, or to see, you know, their own wishes and dreams and hopes in the work. So yeah, it's always like that for me. I feel.
That's lovely. We're here talking about real cool, clubby, contemporary dance. But we go back in time a small bit, I suppose, to your pre-disc, your ballet days.
Yeah.
Did you always know you wanted to be a ballet dancer?
Yes. Okay, so probably from the ages of 3 to 11, I was the annoying kid in the ballet class who just was very giddy and was put in the corner and whatever. And then around that time, an older dancer, there was an exchange between Ireland and Russia going on, and an older dancer from my school came back, and I saw her and I went, oh, that's what a ballet dancer is. Like, wow, it was just completely changed my perspective. And my ballet teacher said to me, Emma, I think you should go to this teacher in Dublin. It was a Russian teacher that came over, because, you know, you'll only go so far with me. And I think, you know, you want to try. So I went up and it changed everything. It was a lot freer, the technique.
Were you in a school in Carlow at the time?
No, so I'm from Meath.
Are you from Meath?
I live in Carlow, but my mom used to bring me up and down to Meath, and then I got the train after school later on. But it wasn't even that it was free, it was more dancery. You felt like you were dancing.
Yeah.
And then I tortured my parents from the age of 12 to 15. Every Sunday dinner I ruined, because I was like, I'm leaving, I'm going to ballet school. Like, I'm leaving school and I'm going. And they were just like, oh, because I also had a place in this Russian school. And they did their research and they sort of gave me a deal in a way. And they said, you can go in your transition year to a ballet school, but it has to be in Europe. So I went to the school in Germany, in Stuttgart, the school of the Stuttgart Ballet. And I was on trial for a few months, and it was very difficult. And actually, to my delight, it was full of Russians and Russian teachers. They were all coming over to this school to teach. So, you know, it was exactly kind of discipline and training I wanted. And every year was a test. So eventually, when I got through the first year, my parents let me stay on, you know, until graduation. And then I got a job in Germany.
So you were in Germany at a super young age.
Yeah, I left when I was 15.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what age did you stay ballet dancing until?
I gave up. I was around 20, probably going on 22. Yeah, I stopped for a while because also I don't know, I probably had very idealistic ideas about working as a ballet dancer, and I thought, you know, that you know, I would progress quite quickly and all the rest. But actually the reality is so different, and I had this sort of vision of myself, you know, 10 years down the line, swan number 17 in the line, doing the same thing every night. And I just thought, oh, you know, and I didn't want to hate ballet, I didn't want to turn my back on it or kind of become bitter about it. So I took a break to kind of figure out, you know, how to stay in love with dancing, but to, you know, to maybe bring something else. So
very mature for 21, honestly, to have that foresight to kind of, you know, see that, you know, it mightn't have been the idealistic dream that you were thinking of.
Yeah, I suppose it was. I just obsessed for so long, and, you know, about this life I was gonna have, you know. And I didn't mind the lack of money, or I didn't mind the sort of long hours or hard work. It was more just that I suppose my dreams of being the prima ballerina were slightly shattered. So, yeah.
And for someone who doesn't know anything about ballet, how hard is it? I know you were saying you don't mind the hard work, but how much work goes into being a ballet dancer?
It's insane. I mean, you could be working 12 hours a day, you know, like working, dancing 12 hours a day. The physical toll on your body, you know, you're really contorting your body, like in shapes where, you know, not all bodies should be put into. You're constantly exercising in between. You're trying to be strong. You're trying to be thin. You're trying to be, you know, the bones of your feet are becoming contorted. It is such a beautiful form of dance, and I still absolutely adore it. And I got so many moments of like, wow, this is almost holy, you know, like this, like really amazing feeling when you're dancing. But it puts the body through a lot of stress and injuries, and yet you'll still go out there and dance through the pain, just because, you know, through the training, your mind is just like, I have to push through, you know, you're not soft on yourself at all. So and you know, it does pay off for those moments where, you know, you have that connection, you know, on stage and everything is flowing and all the rest. But
and when you took that break from ballet, what did you do, or, you know, for that while?
Well, I came home and my parents were like, you're leaving cert, you have to do Irish again, and I was like, oh no. So I actually moved into Dublin. I took a job as a waitress for 2 years. Had a brilliant time, just sort of, you know, just partied and had the teenage years then, and lived in a bedsit and just loved it, living in Dublin. And then slowly I started reconnecting with old dance friends from here and various dance people, and doing little small projects here and there. And then went over to New York to work with a choreographer for a project, and that was great. But I kind of felt like I needed to actually go and read some books. I needed to be forced into kind of, you know, reading and surrounding myself more with some more support to go forward as a maker, or whether I was going to make dance for myself or for others, I wasn't sure. But that's why I applied to Trinity and went in to study theatre in Russian. And thinking I'd come out like as a lighting designer, director, you know, dancing and doing everything, but I just came out and choreographed.
But how was studying theatre in Russian? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, no, it was great. There were two separate subjects. So my minor subject was Russian and major was theatre. Loved it. Because, you know, you're given reading lists like in both subjects, and you have to read the classics, and you have to, you know. And yeah, I suppose just understanding, you know, the history of theatre. And then, you know, we got to sort of do directing. We got to do some film stuff, and it was a great foundation, really, you know, to come out and then combine, you know, the experience of having been a performer myself, and even in Germany, because everything is so large scale, you know, work, ballet shows, opera shows, they're so huge, and in Ireland we don't really have that. So I kind of had that in my mind, you know, these big stages and designs and all the rest, and that kind of helped my ambitions for
and did you think at that stage maybe you might go more of a traditional theatre route, or did you know dance would always be a huge part of what you were going to do?
Oh no, dance, I carried dance so close to my heart that whole time, you know, knowing that even when I was reading plays, I was kind of going, yeah, could probably leave that whole part out and actually just choreograph it and express that physically, and so, you know, so that was always in my mind as something, and that dance is such a quick, it's such an instant way of expressing something when words might take a whole page, you know. So and I'm a big fan of the gut rather than the sort of cerebral, you know, ping pong of thoughts and logic and all the rest. I'm sort of a gut instinct person, so, and that's dance.
So dance is how you express yourself. And even there, you're talking about your young girls, do you like being able to teach that, not teach, but maybe bring that out in younger children and help them kind of express themselves through dance?
Yeah, completely, because these girls, I mean, I can't say I do teach them, because they compete every Sunday. these freestyle kids, and they compete every Sunday. It's really, you know, it's quite a high level that they're at, and they have these coordinations in their body that you're just like even ballet dancers don't have, you know. It's almost sort of gymnastic in a way. But I suppose what I can bring to them is the importance and the feeling and what they can actually express through their bodies, instead of just demonstrating or showing what they can do. They can also use dance in other ways. So that's a really nice, you know, aspect of working with dancers like that, who have all the physical talent and all the, you know, and a lot of the time, you know, I'm really working in their language of freestyle. So that's not my language. So it's kind of, you know, they're showing me, they're going, well, we could do this and this. And I'm like, yeah, do that and that, you know. So it's a nice treat to work with youngsters like that.
Okay, I can imagine. And we were even just kind of, I suppose, bringing it to, going back to the start and bringing it to close, we were saying there, it's like this show was almost like a pressure release after the pandemic for you and for the dancers. But is it a nice time for, I suppose, people as well in general? We're probably getting back into being able to maybe dance a bit more, because I suppose, do you think the ordinary person can also express themselves in dance, even if they're, I suppose, not a professional dancer like yourself, or maybe, you know what I mean, if it's in their kitchen? I'd often dance in my kitchen when no one's watching, but, you know, apart from that.
No, that's what I mean, though. That's why I think for humanity, it's so important, you know, because I feel like, you know, I meet so many people that are like, no, I can't dance, you know, and it's a sort of defensive thing. But I really do think that as human beings, dance is within us, you know. It's not about the beautiful shapes, or it's not about perfect rhythm or whatever, but it's, you know, the body wants to move, and we hear music, we react to music. It's a natural instinct in us, even if it's asleep, you know, at times. And I guess I really hold on to that, you know, obviously trained dancing, it's another step away again, but that's with this like memory of the rave thing, like hundreds of normal people that aren't dancers dancing, you know, and allowing the sort of passion of moving to music going through. So yeah, I mean it just feels like something very close to I think we probably danced before we spoke, to be honest. Like, we were to go way, way back. And I also feel there was something about the show, especially with the freestyler kids. I had this random thought. I'd been watching loads of stuff on YouTube, and what there was a video that was going around, and it was of Sufi Muslims, and their prayer meeting is dance that they do. And I was just like, I thought it was amazing, you know, and that's how they pray. They all dance together in this room. And I had this mad thought. I was like, God, imagine a load of young white disco kids smashing into a room like that, and what, you know, what would happen, you know, like this sort of like completely two different worlds, you know. But in some ways it's like, you know, those kids dance five nights a week, and they just put so much passion into it and so much hope and everything. And so do those people who use dance to pray, you know what I mean? So I feel like there's actually not so much difference.
Yeah, it's not that dissimilar. They both have such passion for what they're doing.
Yes, yeah, and it's important. It's part of their lives, and it's I think dance sometimes has become so elitist. It really bugs me, you know. And ballet in a way is super elitist. Like, it's certainly not an Irish form, you know. We've taken it from the sort of European and the French courts and whatever. It's a kind of a dance of the monarchy, really, or, you know what I mean, like, it's this kind of borrowed form. So and it's highly curated, whereas I think you know, dance should be democratic. Dance is for everyone.
I suppose that's why you are where you are now. So the show is the National Theatre, or previews the 12th?
Previews the 12th. So it's in the National Boxing Stadium.
Okay.
Yeah, on South Circular Road, which the audience will be in an arena style around the performing area.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. So it sort of takes that sort of stage audience feeling away from it. And previews the 12th, and then we open on the 13th.
And there's, in true post-pandemic, are we post-pandemic? I don't even know, wherever we are. But there's a live stream as well, is there?
There is a live stream on Friday night, Friday the 15th. So, yeah. And I think that might be online for a couple of days after.
Well, we'll be really, really looking forward to them. And I know you have plenty of rehearsals today and everything, so I'm going to let you get back to them.
Thanks so much, Anne.
Not at all. Thanks very much for coming on.
Okay. Bye.
The Irish Country Living Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.